Joining us now in studio is Rice County Attorney John Foscom. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you today?
Good. You having a good day so far?
Yeah.
You know, because there's a rumor going around, John. There's a rumor going around that today might be your birthday.
Well, and, you know, my 13-year-old daughter believed that, and she came in and sang happy birthday to me this morning. So it's been a good day so far.
So the 13-year-old is the one starting the rumor.
Right. Well, I don't know who told her.
Well, the day's about to get better because I'm not going to sing happy birthday. I'm just going to wish you a happy birthday.
Not even the Casey Jones birthday song?
Not even Casey Jones.
Oh,
sorry, John.
That's my favorite.
Hopefully this will be the biggest disappointment of the day for you. But seriously, though, you don't get the day off. So you have to go into work, and part of your duty is talking to us. I guess we appreciate that. I don't know if it's actually spelled out in your duties or not, but we appreciate it. Hey, I want to talk. We have the legislative session is going on right now, and there are some always things that will affect your office, changes in laws or the way we enforce laws. There is a bill that's making its way through concerning distracted driving. Tell us about what this is. And
well, there's a couple of bills out there, and I don't have all the details on them, but the basic theory is that if you're using a cell phone and not using a hands-free device, they're going to turn that into a kind of careless driving itself. And particularly, there's going to be a change to the criminal vehicular homicide statute, or there's at least a proposed change. You never know what's going to happen until it really happens at the legislature. But that if you are holding a cell phone and you're making a phone call without using a Bluetooth or other kind of hands-free device, that and cause a crash or a death, that would be treated the same way we treat criminal vehicular operation and the same way we treat someone being under the influence of alcohol. So it's taking seriously the fact that there is some research out there that shows talking on the cell phone while you're driving is in itself a kind of distracted driving, and some studies have shown that it can be as bad as being under the influence of alcohol, and that appears to be what the legislature is trying to deal with here.
Do you know, do you get a sense, is there some momentum in the legislature? Is this going to happen? We have the two parties feuding up there. So if one has the idea, the other one doesn't like it, doesn't like the other party getting a leg up, those things tend to die. Is that going to be the case? Does this have some momentum? Can it get through? Is it bipartisan?
Well, to be honest, I haven't worked out where the loyalties lie on this one and who's going. It may be that this needs a lot more definition and clarification before it can go forward. But sometimes things happen at the last minute, the legislature, that you thought were dead and come back. And this is out there, and I think, you know, that's probably a good question for you to ask your legislators when they come through. I like to give you material to use later, Jeff.
All right. Well, I will be doing that. We'll be talking to one of them tomorrow, a little couple hours from now, about an hour and a half. Let's move on, though. You mentioned drunk driving, and you had there has been a case that's made news really around the state involving a woman who was killed coming back from a Bruno Mars concert. Yeah. And the person who was charged with that has recently been found guilty or pled guilty? How did
He pled guilty. Basically, he pled as charged to the two counts of criminal vehicular homicide and criminal vehicular operation. He was 0.27. And going the wrong way on Highway 19 in a Lincoln Navigator, and he ran over the Volkswagen that this young woman was driving. She was 29 years old, about to be married, and her passenger had some injuries, had some broken bones, but wasn't seriously injured, but had some injuries that qualify as what we call substantial bodily harm, so that was a felony charge as well. So he pled guilty to those two felony charges, and the expectation is that he'll get a sentence of 48 months in prison, which is the guideline sentence.
And this is Mr. Is it Delwo?
Yes, Brandon Delwo is his name, and that is the you know, the expectation is to basically he pled his charge and he'll be getting a guideline sentence. It's roughly what we would expect to get if we went to trial and won.
All right. All right. There have been quite a few recent drug arrests. The task force has been keeping themselves very busy with this, and it's a good thing. Where are we sitting? Let's talk about that.
Well, they are busy. As I think you recall, our task force merged with Le Sueur County a couple of last year, and so the new merged task force has been busy dealing with a number of cases in Le Sueur County, but they've also been busy dealing with a lot of cases here in Rice County. And
do those cases seem to be related? I mean, is there a ring? Do they each have their own separate drug rings, drug cartels? Or
well, I'm not sure they have their own, you know, clear territory. It's not exactly gang wars, but there are a lot of people who work around Faribault, Northfield, and also in Montgomery, Le Sueur area. There's a lot going on. And our task force has done a great job of finding these guys. We had another bust just last week. A guy named Fugali was busted for selling heroin, and there's still a lot more going on. There's a lot more cases to be charged out that we're going to be seeing soon. Our drug caseload has more than doubled since I took office. And the changes in the drug laws changed that a little bit, but our task force has been focusing on the real dealers and the kind of higher level people who are moving a lot of stuff. And so what we're seeing in the 4 years that I've been here is we're seeing a lot more of the higher level first and second degree cases, and not so much of the lower level cases, because that's what the task force has really been concentrating on, is looking for the dealers, not so much the users.
You know, those upper levels, I would presume if you get a dealer that is substantial, they're probably going to be, you know, if convicted, spending an extended time in prison. They're not really the drug court eligible type, though. Am I correct on that? I mean, the low-level offenders, the people who are using and maybe putting family members in such a risk, are they, as far as the drug court goes, is it when you start off, you'd mentioned you've had a number, the number has been growing as far as the graduation rate goes, and it's a process. Is it continuing to grow, or are you getting more people involved?
Yeah, and I think we've got about 15 people in our drug court at this point, and we keep adding to it, and we've had a few graduations. We had a graduation last week, so I think we have 12 people who've graduated from the drug court program so far. We're also looking at adding a different class of people to the drug court, which is our parents in child protection cases who have drug issues who would otherwise not be eligible for the drug court. We're going to bring some more of those in. It may not be a huge number of people, but there are a few people out there that we think we can bring into the drug court that we can reduce out-of-home placements for foster care. We can do a better job of reunifying those families and reduce costs long-term for the county, and that's kind of the goal with that. But yeah, our first and second degree drug cases aren't automatically eligible for drug court. And, we've had a few come into drug court, but mostly those are the people we look at, moving out onto, into prison rather than, at least the first degrees, who are the big time sellers.
You know, I don't know if you have, I'm going to throw this at you kind of blindly, but, the recidivism rate, you know, you arrest somebody for dealing with a serious drug, let's say heroin. They go to prison for 4, 5, 6 years or so. You know, the heroin epidemic has been going on for quite some time. Somebody might have been sentenced in 2008, done their time. They've been out for a few years now. Are some of the names that we're seeing that run through your office now, are they new? Are you seeing old names that have already done some time on different crimes and are back into society?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, and yes to all of that. There are new names. There are old names. And in terms of recidivism, most people kind of age out of criminal conduct by the time they're 35,
mm-hmm.
and have kind of figured out a way to make a living and function in society without continuing to reoffend. We don't have the real recidivism statistics because it's hard to track all of that, and it's hard to agree on a way to track all of that. But we do, you know, we see the same people. There are people who were in the system when I started practicing out here 20-some years ago who keep coming back on either minor drug offenses and sometimes big drug offenses. But most of the people are not, and most mm-hmm. people wind up finding a way to be functional. You know, either we've sent them to prison and they've found a way to rehabilitate themselves a little bit in prison, come back with some job skills and become functional, or they've been through a successful probation program or a drug court program where they've learned some job skills and some functioning skills and figured out that this long-term thing of doing life on the installment plan isn't really working out for them, and it's not a good line of work.
Are people really learning skills in the prison?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Good.
Someday, Jeff, you should take a tour of the Faribault Prison and see their job skills program. It's really kind of amazing.
Hmm. That sounds very interesting. Maybe I'll take you up on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not on your birthday today.
No, we'll talk to the warden. We'll get you in there.
All right. Okay, anything else that you'd like to mention while we have you here?
I think you had down there Dean Dardis.
Dean Dardis
was...
Yes.
He was picked up the other day for assaulting his father at home. He's a guy sitting in a wheelchair, and he's been disabled for about 14 years, and something set him off the other day, and he went after his father with a knife and is alleged to have committed second-degree assault for threatening his father with a knife and a gun and cutting him a couple times. And so he's sitting in our jail for a while while we process that case.
Mm. Yeah, that's an unusual case, to say the least. And
yeah.
His father alleged that he was at one time a meth user and maybe using it again.
That was in the reports. That's mm-hmm. what he said. That
okay.
and
are those part of the charges or no?
That's not really part of the charges, but that's okay. what they said. They thought triggered it, that he must have been using meth again. We don't know that. We don't have any mm-hmm. confirmation one way or another. But the real issue is that he, you know, pulled a knife and caused some injury to his father, and that's what he's charged with, is assaulting him with a deadly weapon, which is, you know, pointing a knife at him.
Yeah, that's not good. Not good. John, thank you so much for coming in today. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you. And
have yourself a great birthday.
It's always a pleasure to see you, even on my birthday.
All right. Rice County Attorney John Fossum. You're listening to 95.1 FM, AM 1080, KYMN Northfield.